the things I wanted to kind of bring up initially. I was listening back to it because you said to Joe Rogan that you feel we're on the precipice of a whole new paradigm and level of access to information that will be a shift for humanity, a kind of paradigm shift. The classified information will become more readily available, and corporate information will become more readily available. And you know, as you said to Joe, we're certainly seeing that happen already. But we're also wading through an information minefield, you know, in the modern age, where people are struggling more and more, I think, to just know what's real and what's true and what can be trusted, what platforms can be trusted. So what tools can be brought to bear in order to stifle the influence of those in power that want to engineer a consensus or a perception management?
Yeah, that's totally true that, you know, more information definitely doesn't equate to, you know, better quality. It's actually worse quality. But yeah, this is one of the most important problems to solve now, especially with AI. It's like half of your news feed is AI now, all the deep fakes and then misinformation, disinformation. So, you know, the long-term solution, I think, has to do with cryptographically verifying content through what are called webs of trust. So, you know, for people who don't understand, you know, in cryptography, whether you're talking about crypto currency or, you know, encrypted messaging, the way it works is you have a public key and a private key. Your private key is like your password, your public key is like your address, and you sign messages. That's what you're doing. You're giving permission, whether it's for access to a message or signing a transaction or whatnot. But what you can do is create these webs of trust. So say there's a piece of content and you could create a function on like a social media post, for instance, where different people can vouch for it. And they would be doing that with their cryptographic keys. And then we can create visualizations so that you can see who in your network has vouched for the authenticity of that specific piece of content. And I think that actually Community Notes is
I was about to
doing,
say Community Notes is kind of like on the verge of that, right?
it is on the verge of that. I don't think they're really using crypto signatures for it. But I do think that they're honestly doing it better than any other platform, and they could grow into that. So, yeah, I think that that's really the only solution. And because what we learned during COVID and whatnot is that the centralized fact-checking organizations are just not viable. But you know, just because you have to trust your network. You can't. There's always going to be the ability for people to be wrong. I think part of we have to accept that as well. And you know, this idea that we need to like get rid of misinformation is just not possible. It's just not a reasonable goal. But we should have methods to, you know, potentially be able to filter your feed so that, you know, you're seeing things that have been vouched by trusted members of your network. But there could also be decentralized, you know, webs of trust, which are, you know, all scammers. But that's kind of what the web of trust exposes. I don't know if I'm
Well, this is the
making
thing
that
though, like,
clear.
you know, do you want to live in a world where information is highly regulated and censored for your own well-being and to make sure you're not offended? Or would you rather live in a world with an open market of ideas and the best ones rise to the top and the worst ones fall to the bottom just by, you know, natural consensus and selection? Censoring and suppression has just literally never been the work of anyone other than a tyrannical ruler or leader. It's just like the 101 of being a
Yeah,
tyrant.
name one example. And no, I mean, history tells us. So, you know, people sort of defending deplatforming, defending censorship on social media platforms, you know, if you ask them for a historical example of when that has been a good idea, they can't give you an answer. I think that, you know, the transition from Twitter to X has certainly been a huge net positive. And it seems like Elon is much more, you know, a fan of free speech and transparency than the prior regime. However, there's still some issues there. You know, it's not fully open source. Mm-hmm. There are still some slight censorship issues. I would say he's at like, you know, I would give him like maybe like a B minus. Because one of the games they're playing is with these interstitials in different countries, which is very complicated. And, you know, I understand like he doesn't want to lose all of the users in like Pakistan, for instance. Because if he disobeys the Pakistani government and doesn't censor it at their behest, then they might block the platform there. But that, you know, that matters too. And I actually am not sure that the EU would block Twitter if he refused to. I think that, but that's a game of chicken that I don't know if he's willing to play that game.
Well, I think that they probably begrudgingly under their breath admit that it's still a very powerful tool, and you know they can't really just back out of it because it's become a significant public square in the online world. And you know, if you're not in the game, if you're not in that information highway, then you're missing out.
It's so wild with, you know, before the podcast, we were talking about how unexpectedly easy it is to reach out to certain people and potentially hear from people. Not that it's always easy, but it is very possible. And with regards to sort of like the current discourse, whether you're talking about, you know, UAPs or whatever kind of classified information, I find it so interesting when you're dealing with these characters like Kirkpatrick and Grutch and, you know, all of the bureaucrats with this issue. It's like you can see that they're playing this game. Like Arrow has their X account. You know, Kirkpatrick's doing these kind of random appearances. Grush understandably has to be a little more careful because, you know, he you know, with all of the Dopser and, you know, just he just has to be careful that he doesn't get in trouble for saying too much. But it's so transparent, like how shallow the public conversation is in that sense, because it's like, okay, there's these guys that are making statements. There's this whole conversation happening, but they're not willing to just like, where's the podcast with Kirkpatrick and Grush? Just like, it's all this back and forth of them making accusations about each other. But for some reason, they can't just get on a podcast and talk about it. Well, even in a very basic way where they're not exposing classified information. That's just like the inefficiency of discourse is just astounding to me sometimes. And then the whole internet, meanwhile, is just going wild for months, speculating and being wrong. And it's so funny.
Yeah, and you know the wheel keeps turning, and the debunkers feel like vindicated because there's not much movement past the glacial pace of bureaucratic language and, you know, NDAA language. And if you want to believe it's going to go somewhere, I certainly have and still want to believe that. But I also just think that it's very possible that all of that could be a smokescreen. The idea that, you know, this is the kind of thing I know you've discussed this and I've certainly discussed it, is that it's very difficult to trust establishment and institutions right now in the world. And, as, you know, as a Western citizen, I've experienced enough over the past few years to have a healthy distrust of our official institutions and our governments. And it's very rare that when there's something very critical, like very disruptive globally or important in a strategic sense, that they'll be objective and transparent and truthful to, you know, their civilians about the about the goals, about the objectives, about what's actually happening. So to think that they would be transparent and honest about UFOs, which is like possibly one of the most disruptive and potentially psychological warfare leverageable subjects going, is an interesting kind of diversion from the normal level of distrust you'd have for these institutions. That's not to throw shade on you know, specific individuals who have come out to try and raise awareness, but the actual institutions itself and the establishment, the intelligence apparatus, the national security state, where the information potentially is housed, where it could flow down from, these kind of like stovepipe programs and these, these special access programs. The idea that if there is something there, that we're going to get hold of that, or if they're going to be truthful about it, is very unlikely. And if they are going to do that, then it's certainly going to be serving an agenda that we're not really being made aware of. And I don't think that's conspiratorial or paranoid thinking. I think it's just logical thinking, because something that this, potentially disruptive, it would be nonsensical from the national security perspective to not leverage that in some way on the global stage. And since we haven't seen the UFOs get rolled out, like the flying triangles get rolled out as like military assets or anything like that, it just makes me wonder. It just makes me wonder what's actually real with this. I mean, all of my deep dives into the UFO phenomenon and my own experiences, which kind of pushed me into this subject to begin with, come from consciousness and the strange intersection between altered states of consciousness or higher dimensional states of consciousness, and even some of the kind of most materialistically driven researchers end up in that place. I mean, I've got some brilliant examples of people who, came from very professional backgrounds, very analytical, very science and method based, who have spent enough time in this subject and gone, guys, it's consciousness related, isn't it?
Right. You know that guy, Area 52? He did the psychic spy, CIA psychic spy documentary. Oh, I right. You got to check that out with like,
Do you mean Mirage Men or?
I forget his name. His YouTube channel is Area 52. I heard about it on the Weaponized show. And it's just, I mean, these programs are just completely real with the remote viewing programs.
Oh,
So,
they're real. That was the first rabbit hole I fell down with questions real.
the fact that that is so real and like continues to get funding, continues to be used, the intelligence gathered from those programs is, there was some very high percentage of like usable intelligence that they were gathering. So that's a huge, I mean, the fact that everybody's not talking about that on a daily basis is somewhat shocking. But then, yeah, look, we're in the process. It's like, and it feels slow, but I do feel like this year has been a huge wedge in the door that is not going to turn around. And I'm not saying that that means any specific outcome of, whether or not it is, non-human intelligence. But just the fact that names of people like Thomas Mannheim are now out there, and we're reading letters from him that are just these hilariously cryptic. I mean, that letter, it was basically his response to Burchett and Luna and these Congress people. And yeah, he just used this encoded, or but again, maybe do you or do you not think that that was kind of encoded language, or is that overly conspiratorial?
No, I mean, it's look, I mean, it's possible, but I think at the same time, whatever's happening in these skiffs, especially when it comes to like anything that's being shared by David Grush, in terms of where it's going to spill out into the public, it's only going to be through that kind of cryptic messaging. Like, these are classified skiff discussions, right? So,
Right.
I think the disconnect is obviously the fact that the skiffs are happening is a really good thing, obviously, the fact that we've had these classified meetings. But how much of that spills out into the public discourse? Probably very, very little. And that's what kind of concerns me, is I think it's a great thing that the congressional and the Senate leadership are potentially getting informed on some of this stuff, and they might be able to chase a few rabbit holes and go down a couple of kind of trails and find the programs maybe within the Pentagon indexes. But the issue, I think, is that there's been such a smoke flare set up by like the NDAA kind of announcing all these intentions, announcing the fact that they want to do this interagency deep dive all the way back to 1940s, and they want, all the classified intel, all the NDAs, all the non-disclosure agreements. They want to have access to all of that, but they haven't had access to it yet. They're getting delayed in the skiffs. They've only just managed to get into the skiffs, and it just makes me worried that all of this time, the people in the back rooms are just burning the paper, so to speak, covering up every sort of trail and track, until eventually, when these people do get the access, can follow the trails from the information in the skiffs, can kind of lead up on it. It's not there anymore.
I don't think you can burn all the evidence, though.
No, but you can certainly hide it. You can certainly hide it. A
Yes, you
burn is
can.
being kind of like a metaphor, just like you know, they'll get rid of it in some way.
Yeah, but there's humans involved. And when there are humans involved with hearts, you get David Grush's. Assuming, I get a good vibe from Dave Grush. He seems genuine to me. I understand why people would be totally skeptical. But, we have parallel tracks of disclosure happening. You have official pathways and unofficial pathways and leaks. And like, so you kind of have like FOIA and leaks occurring in parallel, and they're always going to be occurring in parallel. So, the question is ultimately going to become how, who wants to be the one in control of the narrative? Because, I mean, obviously, if someone leaks, the most insane bombshell, and like some leaker becomes like the disclosure person, like brings some artifact to the public, that would be really insane. But the government is going to want to stay ahead of that. So, yeah, I think that the tracks sort of like support each other, and it's like this elephant in the room sort of situation. It's almost similar with what you see happening with like the Fed and the dollar and Bitcoin. And you've kind of have these like parallel systems occurring. And Bitcoin is sort of sitting there just doing its thing. It's this, decentralized protocol that's totally open source and transparent. And it's just operating the way that it's operating. And it's kind of creating this check and balance for the Fed and, the government's system of money. And governments can no longer behave in the same way that they could pre-Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is this force to be reckoned with. And the more governments print money, the more people are going to lose trust, the more people are going to go over to Bitcoin. And so then you kind of have the open source intelligence world and working in parallel to the classified information world. And there's new avenues for, oh, might have some background music with
No worries,
my
bro.
my wonderful little monster people. So yeah, I think that, I mean, that's what the internet is doing. It's back during Blue Book and all this stuff, it was so different. It's hard for us to really understand because we weren't there, but a world with no internet, a world with just a couple news channels, that is so foreign to us.
I think the issue, though, is that, and we were saying this before, is it's kind of, it's a good and a bad thing, right? Because you've got a lot of information, but how much of that information is good? And I think the UFO subject's actually a really good example of this, because 95% of it is basically just bullshit. And then 5% of it seems like something that really needs to be focused on and understood. But because of the outrageous narrative of the UFO subject, which is, intelligences from other dimensions or other areas of, time and space, it opens the floodgates for imagination. It opens the floodgates for all these role players who want to, present some sort of a narrative or intelligence interference, coming to these UFO conferences in the 1950s, dripping in all of these really insane narratives, and it starts to propagate and build. And at this point, you've got this like mad spaghetti highway of different ideas and conflicting narratives. And that's the problem with it, is it's this very messy kind of situation of trying to sift through and find that high fidelity evidence. And that's always been the issue with the UFO subject, is finding that, signal in the noise. But I actually think that artificial intelligence might be a significant boon to us in actually being able to understand this phenomenon. And then that might even be at least one of the reasons or considerations when rolling out this stuff through the governmental side of things, is that, hey, look, at some point, the civilians are going to figure this out. The scientific community is going to figure this out. They're going to develop, sensor fusion with AI and it's going to be able to find things in the sky, and there's no way that we're going to be able to hide this eventually. So I always think that, you know, perhaps there's certain kind of getting ahead of the game type of feelings that have pushed this forward. We also have to remember that one of the major catalysts for this, whether or not they were already planning to do something and we're just waiting for, you know, the right moment or the right person to step in, most of what we're seeing has been started by Tom DeLonge. That's pretty wild. A Blink-182 rock star has basically, you know, steamrolled UFO disclosure into the congressional corridors. That's nuts.
It is. But, you know, he's a really smart guy.
He is.
And, you know, just because, you know, it's punk rock, it takes insane talent to achieve what he achieved musically. And, you know, that kind of a mind is interested in this stuff and knows how to make things happen.
Yeah.
So
there wasn't a dig. I'm a massive fan of, I grew up with Blink-182, man, listening to Kerrang! On the radio and stuff, and you know, yeah, basically grew up on that music. No, it wasn't a dig. It's just kind of like amazing to think that all can come back to like this type of influence from one guy stepping into a Lockheed Martin conference and having the, you know, status and influence to basically say, look, I'll come up on stage and wave for the crowd, but I want to have a talk with your boss afterwards. Because that's the original, you know, story when he was back in like 2016 or 15 talking to like Coast to Coast Radio and Jimmy Church and people like that. He was telling the story of, you know, going to this Lockheed conference, and they were kind of like, hey, you know, you want to come up on stage and do a smile and a wave kind of thing. And he was like, yeah, but I want to talk to your boss for 10 minutes. And that's when he kind of pitched TTSA and, you know, doors started opening, and it's just wild. So I wonder if they were looking for someone who was going to be the conduit for this, and they didn't really know how to step into the like the kind of popular culture domain and, you know, reach out to the youth of today. And to be honest, even in some of the WikiLeaks emails that came out where he was, Tom DeLonge was communicating with John Podesta, they were saying that kind of thing, like, we want to try and bridge the gap between, you know, the kind of disconnected youth and anti-establishment views, and try and get the idea into their heads that these guys are doing this for patriotic reasons. And, you have no idea how big the secrecy is, and, you know, that these people have made a real sacrifice kind of keeping this stuff under their belt. Which, in fairness, man, like, if I would not want to be these people, like these key holders and these gatekeepers, like, we're sitting on secrets like this. Could you imagine?
Not at all. And I don't think there is a they, though. I think that it's, there is, but within they is fragmentation. And that's why we have whistleblowers. So, because always within they is the people who aren't quite so sure that they want to be a part of this, and they want to get it out. And that's never going to change. There's always going to be people there, I'm sure, right now, you know, planning. I mean, we know what we don't know now, which I think is the breakthrough of this year. We now know that firsthand witnesses have come forward. Now, we don't get access to that, but the fact that we even know that classified conversation is occurring, to me, that's game changer. It doesn't tell me what is necessarily true, but I love the fact that it has basically moved up a layer, or it's moved out a layer. And that's just going to keep happening. You know, I think that I don't expect.
What's the eventual outcome in your mind? Like, you know, if the layers keep layering, where does the layering stop?
As long as it gets into the congressional layer, it's gonna get out. It's gonna. You saw what happened during the UFO hearing when Matt Gaetz told a story that he wasn't even supposed to tell. That was a classified. He was not supposed to do that.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, natural leaking will occur, like, absolutely, over the, you know, next few years, as more of this is discussed quietly behind doors. It will occur naturally. Yeah.
But what I love too is there is for the people who are public, like with Grush's interview the other day with the Italian guys, the Italian press. I don't know if you saw that. All of this new information comes out every single time because there is no clear line with what is and what is not okay to discuss. It's very like, and Congress doesn't know. Like, even in one of Burchett's interviews recently, he, you know, he was getting pressed on what was discussed, and he let some nuggets out because, you know, and he was trying to not say anything, and he was trying to walk that line. But as long as there are people in who are talking to the press who do have congressional access, you know, we just keep clawing and we're gonna get it out. And there's ways for people to say things in ways that protect them, but also tell us what we need to know. Because it's just not black and white with what they're able to say versus what they're not able to say, which is good because it means they can say things in ways that inform us. And then ultimately it just keeps tumbling. So
yeah, I definitely want to believe in that momentum. That's for sure. I really do. I just want to know where it goes and, you know, what kind of information they're given and who's giving it. I mean, I know that, you know, on paper, it does sound good that he's had a bunch of people, I'm talking about David Grush, had a bunch of people talk to him, first-hand whistleblowers, you know, from these programs. What if they're disinformation? This is such a, the thing is this subject, man. Like if we're going to go with like the narrative of what's been going on, like it's 80 years, about 80 years of secrecy, you know, since like the Roswell years, and just compounding since the Cold War, just more and more steel walls of secrecy landing down, more silos, more compartmented programs, you know, further and further and further away from Pentagon audits and all that kind of stuff. And I just worry.
If that's the case...
I really want it to be real, what's happening now. I just worry that even these people like Burchett and everyone that's on the front surface level truly does want the truth to come out. What if they're getting messed with, man? Like, that's what worries me.
Totally, totally possible scenario, which would be insanely sophisticated, you know, disinformation campaign to trick everybody on that level. But if that's occurring, it's still completely mind blowing. It's still the biggest story of the century.
Yeah.
If that's occurring. So
even if like psychological UFO mind games are being played by the government, like, why are they doing that? Like, you're right. That's a massive story in of itself.
That would be, you know, the most ridiculous, you know, kind of social experiment ever perpetrated by a government. So,
well, there's something real. There's something real going on.
Well, it's one of the two. So it's well, either disinfo.
Is it one of the two, or is it hiding the true origins behind a smokescreen? It could be a whole messy gray area, man. Like, you know, it's this, but really it's that. You know, look at the right hand when the left hand's doing.
Okay,
this.
Yeah. So maybe it's one of three. Either like sort of authentic what we're hearing, like most of what Grush has come forward with is authentic, or it's a smokescreen for what is truly authentic, or it's all disinformation.
Right. That's the selection you've got there.
Mm-hmm. And I love that. I love that I get to wake up in the morning now and those are the selections, you know, before me. And as opposed to, you know, what kind of has, I don't know. I mean, I wasn't as deep into this back in the day, but I would imagine that
it started a conversation. 2017 New York Times, it started a new conversation.
Yeah, and the people who have been knee deep in this for decades, you know, might say that I mean, again, like, everybody's disclosure is not disclosure doesn't treat everybody equally. So, like, there's sort of these segments of the population, and it relates to the congressional access versus the, you know, special access program access versus the journalists that are getting, you know, Coolheart, like, he has certain information that puts him personally, psychologically, in a unique situation. Everyone has their own relationship with truth, and they have their own specific access to information. So, you know, it's happening at a different pace for everyone. And then, yes, there's like this broad general disclosure where you're kind of making a, just like larger segments of the population are waking up to certain things. But I feel that this is a much more like granular process with specific people getting brought in. And that's how it's always been. It's, you know, there's special access programs.
How long have you been interested, man, in the subject?
Oh, I mean, since I remember being in the library in my elementary school in Connecticut.
It's always the library in school and the UFO book on the shelf.
Well, where else could you get it? There was no internet. Yeah. Yeah. It was the library, and you know, it was the UFO book on the shelf, and you know, consciousness as well brought me to it. I mean, everything that I do with Minds is which is my company, is about sort of harnessing consciousness. Like, you know, the technology that we're building is based on the consciousness of the group of people who are using it and who are creating it. And we're kind of trying to create this open source environment of information and technology. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's why I'm here. I'm here to build tools to help consciousness evolve. I'm here to find out why I'm here. And so I want everything that I do to be focused on that. And you know, that inevitably starts to intersect with, you know, getting after the information. So in on both the corporate and government end of things. So, you know, because there's a lot, and that's what we're seeing. We're seeing that there's this revolving door between the private corporations and the government. And, you know, that's where the information and technology is sitting. And it's not just about UFOs. I mean, it's about almost energy, technology, everything. Yeah, any point, topic, any
energy,
type of technology.
Geopolitics,
yeah.
Whatever, you know, that information integrity has got lost in the kind of like sea of disinformation and fake news and propaganda and deep fakes. And, you know, we need to find a way to bring ourselves back into some anchorage of normality. You want to tell people a little bit about Minds for anyone that hasn't heard of it and wants to know more?
Yeah, Minds at minds.com is a open source and decentralized social media network. You can create your own application with it. We have a community with millions of people that is, you know, we're moving along. We're in the space. You kind of have the proprietary big tech companies, and then you have open source decentralized projects. Others in the open source decentralized space would be places like Blue Sky, Mastodon, Noster. You know, these are the open source decentralized. And then obviously you have X is sort of the first big tech company that has started to bleed into our realm because they've been open sourcing some stuff. They've entered the free speech world. You know, Elon seems to care about censorship resistance. But, you know, ultimately, my belief is that the world needs to be running on an open source decentralized infrastructure. So whether, you know, go across different industries, whether you're talking about money, whether you're talking about social networking, whether you're talking about energy technology, whether you're talking about architecture, homes. I mean, I have a good friend who runs a group called Open Source Ecology. They build open source tractors, open source blueprints to build a house. And it's just this idea that society functions better and it's more sustainable for society to be running on, you know, transparent infrastructure. Otherwise we get into issues like we've gotten into with the corruption of big tech and the corruption of governments and, you know, the secrecy complexes. That's just what inevitably happens. So, you know, I guess I am curious, and I'm kind of grappling this with this myself. Where do you draw the line in terms of what should be kept secret?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It depends, I guess, on different things. Depends on what is impacted by that secrecy. There are certain things, from like a national security perspective that I can understand. And to be honest, even with the UFO subject, I mean, it's a difficult one, man. Like, what happens if you open source? Let's just say, for hypotheticals, argument's sake, we have highly disruptive energy systems, like crazy beyond next generation breakthrough energy systems, anti-gravity, or like bending space and time into a little bubble of energy, or anything like these kind of concepts that are floated out. What happens if you open source that? What happens if some dude in his basement creates something that creates a singularity and just black holes the Earth into oblivion? Like,
Well, I think that's the conversation that government officials are having, and that is their rationale. Now, but I think that comparing it to nuclear is useful because if you're smart enough, you can build a nuclear reactor. That's open source. So it's not easy, and you'd probably be breaking the law if you go and do it. So I think, and actually, if you look at the treatment of nuclear, first of all, a lot of the nuclear laws are apparently what are being used to keep some of this stuff secret. So I think
Oh,
there's
yeah,
huge,
it is. Department of Energy, DOE,
yeah.
is
So there's huge parallels with that, and I think it's a useful analogy because, just because the science around nuclear energy is open and transparent, anyone can study it, anyone can, I think we need to think about it in a very similar way. I don't think we should go into this doomer type mentality, like, oh, if there is some sort of, near free energy device, then, that could disrupt the whole global economy, or, could cause some sort of, could cause the world to implode. It's just, I would rather it be out there with the risk of the world imploding, to be honest.
Well,
I guess.
I think with some of the smartest people that I really appreciate in this field, that I talk to, have floated out the idea, and I think that it's worth considering. Although I certainly don't want to be overly pessimistic, but I do think that it's worth considering that in order for this kind of these kind of innovations to enter into global applications, you need to restrict the global population further and further, so that these things can kind of come out in a highly managed way inside a quite a managed world. So you don't get your own personal anti-gravity craft. It will be extremely managed technology
For
in a way
sure.
that doesn't allow people to exploit it outside of these, kind of strict parameters. And that might not necessarily be the worst thing. I think people just worry that it goes in tandem with kind of, AI surveillance, social credit score kind of world. And I don't want to head into that kind of dystopian reality, but I do think that there's a potential for it going the other way as well.
I mean, apart from sort of the potential of cheap near or near free energy for the world, I think that the implications of the phenomenon being real are, for surveillance, for instance, I mean, surveillance becomes a completely different conversation if the phenomenon is real. If the phenomenon is real, then essentially everything is being surveilled all the time. And there's this consciousness element to surveillance where, there's almost like this imprintation happening in reality itself. And that is just a so you could call that dystopian, or you could just but that would kind of mean that the nature of reality is dystopian. But that doesn't, but you don't have to call it dystopian. I mean, if there is this ability to sort of monitor everything, then that's just how it is. And that's just something that we have to come to terms with somehow. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you in kind of the slow rollout. I think treating it, you know, if there were these big facilities similar to nuclear power plants where energy production was happening, or if there, you know, if we started using the craft for transportation, I mean, yeah, it would have to be managed. And but guess what? If you worked hard enough, you could get into a position to be one of the managers. And you should have to. You should have to earn that responsibility.
Well, yeah, it's like, you know, not everyone just gets their own personal F-18 that they can fly around. You know what I mean? Right. You have to earn that pilot's license where you just jump in the cockpit. So it's only fair that it would apply to these kind of things. Although it is certainly, if we're talking about superluminal beyond light travel, it's a different conversation entirely. But the math
should come out. Like, yeah, that should be opened up. You know, the whatever the science is, like a book could serve. I think that should be published.
Well, don't you kind of feel like we're getting there? Like, it almost feels right. If we're going to go with that narrative of Roswell, it almost feels like an example of technology we weren't really ready for at the time fell into the laps of certain people. And now, in the year 2023, with the development of, you know, like kind of where we're getting close to room temperature superconductivity, some people claim we've already done it. There was the LK99 superconductor thing that came out recently, but then they kind of recounted it and said, oh no, we didn't actually manage to do it. It's all a bit suspicious. But you know, you've got room temperature superconductivity on verge, you've got artificial intelligence, quantum computers. All of these things kind of almost feel like they're coming together to create the UFO. Like, these are the fundamental basics of how you end up with that kind of a vehicle. So maybe the whole disclosure process is happening because a few people in some quiet places have decided, yeah, the technology we've been studying is actually starting to, you know, kind of surface out into the normal scientific world naturally. And maybe it's time that we just let that out because they're going to get there pretty soon.
Yeah, and I think you've had Jeremy on, Jeremy Riss.
Yes, a couple times, yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of what he's into. He looks at all of the current peer-reviewed research that's sort of, you know, kind of scraping the types of technology that, you know, people speculate about, and he tries to find the research, you know, the open research that shows that we're actually getting there.
Yeah, I honestly think that AI. I keep saying it, but I really think AI can be leveraged here eventually. Not right now, but when it's at a more sophisticated state, I think it will be able to analyze our current physics models. It'll be able to think in ways that we couldn't possibly imagine. It will come up with ideas and, you know, avenues of exploration for technologies that we wouldn't have thought of, and ways of putting things together. So I think that, like, a partnership between humans and AI, especially in physics going forward, might actually end up becoming revolutionary in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, I'm very curious about, you know, the GPTs that they're running behind the scenes. And what that's capable. But that is another check and balance for the government, because yeah, it's like we have these tools to analyze, you know, not just data, but, you know, visual systems. We can analyze media. It is curious to me, like, why Elon isn't more bullish on getting to the bottom of this. I think we need him on, you know, team disclosure.
I think
anyone out there, you know, let's bring Elon in to, you know, get on team disclosure. That's not saying you think it's real or fake, but like, we need him on the team.
Definitely. Because yeah, I agree.
He's not on, like, he's still very skeptical and for good reason. Fine. But he takes this position as if it's like, oh, I would be the one to know because I'm launching, you know, rockets all the time. And but no, not really. Like, you wouldn't like, unless you're putting cameras on all of the Starlinks and like actually looking, it's like he's waiting for it to find him as opposed to looking himself. Like, let's get all of his rockets, you know, gathering the information. Let's get him linked up with, you know, the Galileo project and like, or, you know, these different organizations that are actually looking. And I feel like he would be open to that. I think he just hasn't, like, for some reason decided that he wants to push.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. Maybe he feels like he's got too many controversial subjects under his belt that he's dealing with at once to kind of take the UFOs on at the same time. But you'd think that I think that draws a lot of suspicion to him. I'm a fan of Elon personally, but I definitely think people get suspicious because of the fact that he's like, oh, well, you know, I would have known because of all of my space-based assets. And there's just people going like, oh, he's definitely under a non-disclosure agreement. You know, like someone's come and said, oh, you can't talk about what your satellite recorded out there. And it's possible, but I think that you're most likely right. He's not looking. Like, he's got these assets in space, but they're not trained to look for these things. They're not kind of, you know, multi-spectrum visions and looking for signatures popping up in space. So the idea that you would actually get a chance encounter is really slim, I would say, really, really slim. But yeah, it'd be great to get Elon on board, and maybe he will as things evolve. But at the moment, you know, a couple of we've had Eric Weinstein kind of dip his toes in. He's still tentative, and he's still interested in the subject. But I feel like a little bit like me and some others, he's just not sure who to really trust. There's so many interesting stories, but who's telling the truth here?
Oh, if Elon was at the level of Eric, that would be great. That's the
Oh
level
yeah,
you want. That's the level
yeah.
you want to be at. I mean, that's like,
An interested skeptic. He's skeptical, but he's actually interested, and he's still engaged. He's not
he's
dismissive.
working on it.
He's
I mean,
working on it. He's
he's
working on
actively
it.
reaching out to people.
Yeah,
He's
yeah,
setting up meetings. He
yeah.
wants to figure out who is the intelligentsia here.
Exactly.
And you know, Elon made one post, I think it was around the congressional hearings time, where he said, I think he said something along the lines of like, oh, I'm glad that's happening. Which I thought was good to see, but you know, that's the for someone who is dedicating his life to, you know, interplanetary life, you know, getting humans interplanetary, and I would just, yeah, it's very odd, and I
Plus,
understand why people would be conspiratorial, but I don't get a conspiratorial vibe. I just get it. I get a vibe like he's just not. He just hasn't gone there yet.
yeah, he's just not that interested right now. And it's kind of
Right.
funny because he's fostered this kind of counterculture tech bro movement online, and loads of them are totally into the UFO subject. So it's kind of interesting because, like, a lot of your demographic that you've kind of energized over the years on X, they're into it.
Well, yeah, and even, you know, Joe on his show has asked him about it like repeatedly, and you
Yeah.
know he doesn't push too hard because I think he knows that it's like it's just something he's not that interested in, which is so bizarre because
Maybe he's an alien. Maybe he's
well,
an
it's just I think the problem is that there's a learning curve. In order to understand all of the whistleblowers, in order to understand all of the history, you know, I just don't think that Elon is read about it. I mean, he didn't even know who Commander Fravor was
alien.
when Joe mentioned it to him. So it's like if you don't know who Commander
Yeah.
Fravor is, like you need to go and do that work. And he's very busy. So for him to go off, you know, what would you say if somebody spent
Honestly, I would say if on the off chance that Elon Musk is watching this, just watch The Phenomenon by James Fox. That's a brilliant documentary. That's a good way to bring yourself up to speed.
It is. Yeah, that's a good one. I think that if you could probably spend a week watching, you know, watch all of James Fox's films, watch what else would you recommend? But like, do you think that what's the fastest amount of time you could get to a decently educated position
Honestly,
on this topic?
I would actually say The Phenomenon. It's a really good documentary because it just kind of lays down the basic template of what the history is believed to be, like the kind of highest fidelity narrative of what the history is through Roswell, through the Cold War, to the you know CIA getting established and Blue Book getting established, and
I
these
know, but the
split
problem
fidelity.
is, like, I've shown that film to people and it's good. And they're like, whoa, but very little of it registers. Like, in order, like, it's watching the phenomenon when you've been researching UFOs for a decade is a very different experience of watching the phenomenon from when it's your first time watching it. So
Yeah.
it's like, I watched it with my wife and she's like, you know,
Actually, you know what?
really enjoyed it, but
I take that back. The National Press Conference of 2001. That's what I'd recommend.
oh, the Disclosure Project.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, no, that's
That's the
what that
best.
was one of the first things that did it for me. But again, I think that there's a certain barrier in people's brains where it, I don't know, it has to like
I think it depends on who you
connect
are.
somehow. Yeah, it has to, yeah, it depends on your context.
Depends on who you are. I mean, like, to be honest, like I sat my granddad down to watch that, like the 2001 press conference, and he's like a very kind of quite serious PhD chemist, realist, not someone to kind of like think about weird stuff like that, and he was blown away. So I was like, okay, all right, like if it worked on my granddad, maybe, I mean, because it is incredible. The 2001 press conference has still not been repeated in terms of the level of influence it could have had. It could have had, didn't have, but could have had, because there was so many insiders and whistleblowers up on the stage. This time was great. We had three, but there was significant testimonies in that 2001 press conference. So, but it's difficult, man. Like, it's really hard. Like, what do you recommend for someone? I don't know, like, look through the interviews that people have done, but it's whether or not they're engaged with it. If they don't care, if it doesn't figure into their life enough, they're not going to be convinced by whatever you show them. So, really, it's just a case of, at least for me, when I got interested in this subject, what I realized quite quickly, which is why I created a YouTube channel, was that you can't and you shouldn't try and convert people. You can't kind of bring someone to that level of interest and understanding of it if they're not ready or don't want to engage with it. So, for me personally, for my own mental health sake, when it came to convincing people, I was just like, you know what? I'll just create a YouTube channel
Oh
and
yeah. Oh,
people
it
start coming
hurts.
to you.
Yeah, it's very it hurts both people when you're trying to convince someone of something.
For
It hurt
sure, for
like
sure.
no one walks away happy.
No.
And I think that's a little bit of what's happening with Elon. I think that he feels like people are trying to convince him, and he's just not gonna let that happen.
Yeah,
And
he's digging it in even deeper each time.
yeah, it's too bad. I think it will happen, but he probably needs to talk to somebody who's like involved. Like he needs to talk to like Grush or a First Hand or something.
Yeah,
I
I'm
don't
kind of
know.
surprised no one's pulled him to the side yet. No one's managed to get in touch with him, It's just
Yeah.
interesting that no one within the intelligence community has kind of like, greased the palms and kind of passed a message down to him. We should
Well, guess
meet.
what? He likes to, blabber his mouth. So
That's true. He's not exactly someone that you would trust to keep a state secret if you had one to spill out. So,
no, he would start teasing that if he got information. Like he would definitely want to tell people. He would probably start, posting about it immediately. So,
I mean, yeah, well, who wouldn't? You have to be a very particular type of person to have that information and not want to say it. It's like, okay, I've got a great example of this because I probably have to be a little bit careful in case I like, legally implicate like someone. So I'm not saying 100%, but it's very it seems very clear that Admiral Bobby Ray Inman, who's a very high level director, former director of multiple intelligence agencies, had some involvement in the UFO subject. There's like recordings from back in the 80s of him speaking privately to a NASA mission specialist about retrievals of vehicles, and maybe it'll come out in the future, but not now, and all this kind of stuff. And I managed to get him on the record to talk about it. And he went into this full denial mode about the whole situation. And it's just interesting because I think you do have to be a particular type of personality to just hardline take that secrecy with you for the rest of your life and not relinquish it. That being said, dude, we don't know what these people are under in terms of NDAs. Especially with a subject like this. We don't know. It could be serious. They might worry about their family safety. It could be a real situation of being terrified of actually speaking out, which is why when they set up the whistleblower legislation through the NDA, it was such a big thing. It's a big deal that they had that whistleblower legislation come through. Problem is, a lot of people seem to feel like Arrow is not actually that friendly to whistleblowers. So now it's all up in the air. People don't really know how to feel.
Honestly, the language in the NDAA and the Intelligence Authorization Act, like I'll share just little screenshots of some of the language in there to my friends. And that's some of the most effective tool that I've found. Because it's like, how is this in the language? It's like, this is sophisticated, a sophisticated lexicon. like these very detailed, very specific, like typically politicians are so ignorant on, like, when it comes to like tech legislation or social media, like you hear politicians talking about technology and they're just like, they don't get it. But for some reason, they just had all of this language.
Retrieval of non-human vehicles or technologies, and like this is the kind of keywords that were actually listed in the NDAA, and it was pretty wild to be reading through that. You're right, that's a very effective tool, I'd say. Actually, a couple of
it's straight to the source,
because it's like, dude, look, this is literally from the National Defense Authorization Act, fiscal year 23, signed off by President Joe Biden, and in this is literally the language about.
Well, what is the situation on the passing of that? Because I feel it's not passed.
It's not passed yet. I can't remember when it actually gets actioned, but I'm pretty sure it's actually kind of essentially locked in place at this point, unless it's disputed, which it hasn't been.
Oh. Okay, good.
I think that's right. But I can't remember when it's actually meant to go into action. Like I said, the only issue that I worry about with that is that you've given off a smoke signal to these people to start rushing around and hiding as much as possible. And, you know, I just hope that they don't get there and find the room empty.
Well, was that on this podcast when Ross said that it can't be moved?
Yeah. Or was
it? Yeah.
And he can't talk about that anymore.
Yeah,
I've pressed him a couple times privately, and he's not budging. He's not budging on that. But well, yeah, man, like if that's true,
well, the thing too to understand with the way that government information works and government communications is that, you know, yes, things do get deleted, but there's a lot that they just have. It's not easy to delete things because there's a paper trail when you delete stuff.
But again, it depends on how deep this labyrinth really goes, because we're not talking about conventional standard government oversight audits. I mean, even the conventional special access programs are not getting past the audits. Just recently, DOD failed their audit for the sixth time running.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like these people are hiding and funneling money in conventional special access programs, just dealing with normal platforms, normal systems. And so if we're dealing with alien technology in unacknowledged or waived or carved out special access programs, which is like kind of like subterranean level below the SAP, below the conventional SAP, like the thin thread connecting it to officialdom is so fine. Like you can barely even sift through it and find the program indexes. So that's what worries me. I mean, do you know about the Admiral Wilson documents? Are you familiar with that thread?
Yeah.
I mean, like that's what he says, right? If we're taking what was put in those documents as a legitimate conversation, which I personally still think was a legitimate conversation. You know, that's what he was saying. It's like, this was spread out amongst, you know, other places, and you had to put the pieces of the puzzle together to even figure out what it could be. And so it's like, you know, you're just dealing with a very difficult kind of shady operation.
Yeah. What was the acronym that Grush brought up in the hearing? It was like IRAD.
Oh, IRAD. Yeah. That's the research. Yeah. And yeah.
That's basically the line. That's the line item on the contractors' budgets, which kind of compartments everything. And it's like independent research, I think, is what it stands for. It's like independent, it's like research program.
Independent research and development or something. I had a friend of mine who used to be in the US Navy IC in the intelligence community. And he phoned me up and was like, dude, I almost fell out of my chair when he brought up IRAD. Because IRAD is one of these things that's just kind of like, it's a bit like Fight Club. You don't really mention IRAD in these kind of situations in congressional spaces, because it really is essentially like a collective slush fund for black money. And, you know, it's widely known internally to get misappropriated, like the funds get put into the wrong places. And so like him bringing up IRAD was definitely interesting, because the financial mechanisms is where you'll pin them down. If you can find those financial streams, which will be murky, but if they're in IRAD, there will be some level of kind of chain of custody towards these programs.
I mean, so, I would be so curious, what are the current regulations around IRAD? Like, how much is a contractor allowed to put in an IRAD bucket? And like, there must be some kind of limitation, otherwise, but it seems like there's not.
Well, there's probably loopholes, man. Like, they're just so good at jumping through loopholes, aren't they? And like, if we kind of create three or four or five programs and they all run into different IRAD like slush funds, but they're all actually the same program. We just coalesce that fund afterwards, that kind of thing. Like dodgy splitting up of operations, which again is what Admiral Wilson said he discovered, all of these kind of weird sub programs that were actually one program in multiple area spread out. And so that could be a way in which you kind of get funding through this stream, get funding through this stream, but it's all going to the same program. And then there's even the slightly, darker route to take of black money from guns, trafficking, drugs, the CIA being completely in bed with the Mexican drug cartels, like, this stuff that's basically almost provable, but essentially just evidential. That the intelligence community runs the drug trade or heavily monitors and controls the drug trade, like skim some cream off of the top of that and put it into a black program. That way, the Congress is never going to find out, and
Well,
I think there's a
IRAD
real
seems
reality to that.
like a focal point that needs
Oh yeah.
so much more attention. I mean, it's almost like not everything, but so many issues are solved by focusing on IRAD. I mean, because it's not just UFOs, it's the whole black budget.
It's the whole black budget.
So,
I would
and
say
that's relevant.
IRAD and the DOE. They're the two major keystones.
Right. Yeah, I'm surprised that like there needs to just be like a documentary like only IRAD. Or just I want to know. Let's follow up after this and figure out. Let's keep thinking about IRAD because
Yeah.
it's not clear to me that anyone is really leading the way in terms of digging into that. And
Well,
you know,
I'd like to think that congressionally someone's digging into that since it was given to them as, information to follow up on. I'd hope someone's doing their homework on IRAD internally because they'll have more access, better access to people that are actually responsible for those those money channels.
yeah, I mean, even
So,
AOC was, you know, and that was what she was most interested in.
which, to be fair, was one of the times where I was finding myself in agreement with AOC.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, because you look like a hero if you're, you know, uncovering government
Yeah.
contractor abuse. So that's the thing. There's so much opportunity for members of Congress
Yeah.
to, you know, be the hero in because it's bipartisan. I don't know. I'll be curious who in the, I mean, let's see. Vivek has been pretty
I think he's mentioned
pro
it once or twice.
transparency.
Yeah. He mentioned it once or twice. RFK's mentioned it, but he's kind of almost out at this point, by the
But
looks
then
of it.
oddly, like Biden is sort of letting this all move along, you know, under him with Schumer and like as the NDAA progresses. It's like that's all happening under Biden, which is just interesting.
Do you think he really knows it's
Well, I
going
don't
on?
know. I mean, you know that Hillary and Podesta were
Well, they're super into
super,
it. They're super
yeah,
into it.
they're
Yeah.
super into it. And you know that, I mean, he can't even really have a conversation about anything, but he's just sitting in the chair. So I don't think it's really relevant.
That's what I mean. I think he's just kind of signing the paper when it gets put on his desk, kind of thing. But like you said, Podesta, majorly interested, majorly involved. Clinton, Hillary was photographed. I want to say it was the Rockefellers. You know
Yeah, it was
about
Rockefeller.
the
Yeah, the
Rockefeller
Rockefeller
Conference,
Initiative.
holding her little book. I forgot the name of the book, but yeah, she's deeply involved, like deeply interested in it. That's for sure. She was the first one, I think, the first one to say UAP, unidentified aerial phenomena,
But
on
isn't it
that.
kind of ironic that even though like Biden is so cognitively out to lunch, like when looking back on history, I do think that assuming the NDA completely makes it through, like that is completely historic.
Oh, it
How
is.
funny will it be if in like 50 years people look back and they're like,
The disclosure president. Yeah, I know that would be. He was the one that managed to break down the iron walls of secrecy with the mighty fist of freedom and democracy. Yeah, man, that'll be it. That'll be the legacy. But either way, look, whatever, dude. I just want that disclosure out. If it's Biden, it's Biden. If it's whoever it is, like, if you can get it out, please get it out. Like I said, I come from this. I do think that there's probably a material nuts and bolts element to this this phenomena, and it's probably a spectrum of different things. just because it's in the air doesn't mean it's all the same, you know, UFO. It's a very ambiguous term, and there probably are things that are quote unquote alien from other civilizations. But for me, there's just this deeper level to it, which is this weird path of synchronicity and consciousness and psi phenomena, like you were mentioning the remote viewing earlier. Like, that was one of the first things that I really discovered when I was going through the CIA's Freedom of Information Act library online, and you know, kind of stumbled across this term remote viewing and found all these programs and realized, holy shit, these guys were like heavily invested in psychic phenomena research. And that was mainly spurred on, I don't know if you know, you probably do because you've clearly done your research and your homework, but it was primarily spurred on by the fact that the Russians were way ahead of us on that during the Cold War. They were super involved.
So you know Gary Nolan,
Yes.
and so Gary did a interview the other day, like a month or two ago, with this guy named Tyler Henry. You ever heard of
Yeah,
him?
yeah. I've spoken to him on X before.
To Tyler?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, really?
He's the medium, right?
He's the yeah. I
Yeah.
actually I saw him live in New York the other day.
Nice.
And he also, I mean, his Netflix series is absolutely insane. Like I have always been specifically turned off by mediums
Yeah.
for some, I mean, none of that, just none of them resonated with me. And I've been to a couple and I just thought it just wasn't working. But watching his stuff, it's just, I was completely blown away.
Yeah, he's an interesting
I
guy.
was even crying at one point in his documentary, which I'll admit it's because it's so emotional, and but it's correlated to the remote viewing stuff. And he has done in his Netflix documentary, he's worked with law enforcement on multiple occasions. So,
Yeah.
you know, the fact that all this investment is going into it, and you know, there's like, I mean, it speaks for itself
Yeah.
ultimately. And yeah, I think
So
it is.
you're of the opinion that consciousness is, you know, non-local or can be, or is like in some way received, not generated by the neural structure, kind of received by the
Yeah.
brain. Yeah.
Yep. That is
Yeah.
definitely where I would lean. And
Do you
yeah,
consider this,
it's
do you think there's a source consciousness? Like, sorry to jump in there. I just wonder
oh
if
yeah.
you have like a kind of spiritual underpinning of that.
I mean, I find it very difficult to argue with panpsychism. I think that it seems most likely to me. And I don't think that necessarily. Are you familiar with Philip Goff?
Yes.
Yeah, he's great. I think that his approach is very balanced, and you know, it's just fundamental. I think because it feels so arbitrary to pick the point of emergence.
Yeah.
You can't. So, you know, it seems it's much a much more elegant solution to have it be fundamental.
Yeah, I think so. I think the ability for self-awareness to emerge out of what is apparently quote unquote dead matter is in it must be indicative of a fundamental intellect within that kind of building block of you know, energy that rolled out of the so-called beginning of space and time. It kind of unfolded over time. And one of my favorite kind of philosophers, I suppose, is more of like a psychedelic shaman, is Terence McKenna. You know Terence McKenna?
Oh yeah, I fell asleep 2 nights ago listening to one of his lectures
Oh,
with my
God.
phone way too close to my head. I'm still trying to figure out the best way to fall asleep to something without annoying my wife, which doesn't have you know, headphones in my ear. I don't know. I haven't hacked the system, but I love listening to Terrence McKenna lectures, and his brother is great too.
Yeah,
And
I've heard Dennis
Alan
Allen a
Watts
couple
as
of times.
well.
Alan
Yeah.
Watts. Alan
Yeah.
Watts. These are just the classics, man. Like, I'm so happy these people. I mean, Dennis is still alive, and I actually have had him on a couple times. He's a great guy. But I'm so glad that people like Terence and Alan Watts have been immortalized through YouTube and through these different platforms, like all these lectures. Thank God people saved them and recorded them and housed them, because there's so much value to be found in some of these lectures from these guys. And you know, there's I think there's even a 24-hour mix of Terence McKenna because I downloaded that and I just put it on and had it on in the background. And, you know, these people really contributed a lot. And I'd love for them to be alive right now, especially Terence, because I just get the sense that he'd be looking at the world we're in now and just being like, yeah, this is the eschaton. Like, we're at the edge now. It's you know, some fundamental transformation is taking place
Yeah, I mean, I
in
just
the
got
story.
ch chills a little bit, but and you know, I'm again, the verdict is not in for me, but every day I sort of inch a little bit closer. Like, you know, if it is fundamental, then you know, all these characters are still around.
Well,
You
I
know, it's
sometimes,
not, you know, so that they're still in the room, and that's a pretty hardcore thing to accept, you know, because they feel gone. But also they don't. And yeah, this is like I'm kind of going through a, you know, a bit of a debate just because the Tyler Henry stuff and like because he literally is talking, well, I won't say the word literally. I mean, he claims to be talking to dead people. Like real time. He can go into this mode and he's communicating insanely specific messages to people. So, you know, if that's occurring, then I don't know. Everything becomes sort of La La Land.
Well, do you think, because and this is another thing I've kind of grappled with, I guess, is do you think that our journey down the technological route of development is an error, or is it actually encoded into our evolution? It's something we're supposed to be doing, because we went from this very shamanistic, paganistic, in one with Gaia, in one with nature kind of collection of people to this hyper evolving, hyper-accelerated, technologically orientated species. And I wonder, and I kind of like to think it's possible that because we're never going to go back to just being in the trees and in the jungle and drinking the ayahuasca, like we're on a different trajectory as a collective. You know, pockets of people will be doing that, but collectively we're on a different type of journey. But is that journey into technology, is that eventually going to give us the tools required to kind of pierce into these other dimensions and actually find the evidence and empirically prove the spiritual world? And what
Yeah.
happens if that becomes possible?
I think most likely that is the case. And but the idea I used to be very much kind of in the camp you're talking about of like being more anti, you know, ridiculous technology growth and like I, you know, I was living
Transhumanism and all that kind of
yeah,
stuff.
I was living, you know, much more kind of trying to be minimalist. I mean, I'm still being minimalist, but you know, less technology is better was more my philosophy. And then I've completely changed since. I mean, I first of all, techno guilt is not fun. I don't like feeling guilty about working or doing something like this or like, you know, if I'm gonna be reading something on my phone, I'm gonna enjoy it. And I'm not gonna let this whole idea, like, yes, I'm gonna also try to balance my life so that I'm not doing that too, but I'm not gonna have this thing where I'm feeling like, you know, I'm just being some drone looking at my phone. Like, I am gonna enjoy that experience and get the most out of it. And, you know, and Terrence talks about this all the time, but like, it is technology is the jungle. Like,
Yeah, it is
it's the
nature.
same, it is nature. So there you go. It's just, you know, it looks different.
Yeah. This is people, this is the thing that there's a weird disconnect, because I don't actually know what artificial means. There's no such thing as art. Everything, if you really want to be, you know, technical, everything goes back to the same kind of atomic structures in different you know, kind of different configurations, but it's the same dancing atoms and quarks and protons and neutrons. And so if we go into, like, yeah, like you said, nature, yes, we do refine and kind of condense and change the structure of it, but it's still nature, still
Yeah, and you
nature.
can make whatever aesthetic choices you want. I mean, you know, you can, you know, you could have your laptop and, you know, live in a super modern place where it's all plants around you and glass, and it's just, it feels sort of like that hybridization of, you know, nature and technology.
I'm
Like,
down with that.
That's kind of the environment that you can control if you want to. So, yeah, I think that we do need to keep working to evolve physically and technologically, and the idea that we should go backwards. You know, it's like you have different people doing different jobs. There's people who are here to work on the kind of the internal exploration, and then there's people like Elon who are going to work on the external. And but we're both part of the same team, and we're both bringing each other, and you can do both at the same time too. One question I had about a lot of the journalists that you talk to, and you know, when you kind of press people who you feel like have access to certain information that may be groundbreaking, how do you think about the ethics of sharing that? And isn't it funny that we're kind of coexisting, you know, not even talking about government bureaucrats, but like actually people in our community, people in our network potentially have, well, and they claim to, and they just won't talk about it. But like that is a very odd dynamic to me. And I understand they're doing it for journalistic integrity, and that is absolutely paramount. But do you think that there ever comes a point where the ethics aren't so clear?
Yeah, I do. I think there's only I have only one personal example of something that I still can't make public, and it makes me uncomfortable. And it's not necessarily something that would blow the doors wide open, because it's a series of statements being made by someone. And what can you do with a series of statements? That's all they are, is a series of statements. Who is the person is what's interesting. But I don't have permission to share that publicly from that person. That's the only little tidbit that I really want to put out there, that I can't, because of respecting their desire for privacy and, I guess, concerns for professional blowback. But yeah, like I mean, me and Ross, I've spoken to Ross for a number of times. In fact, not meaning to brag, but I got the first exclusive interview with Ross. Like, I knew him before he broke out into the scene, and was talking to him quietly in the background with a couple of other Australian researchers that I'd got connected to. And yeah, got the first interview where he was talking about his book In Plain Sight. And so I've been really privileged to have an interesting kind of private relationship with people like that and some other journalists. And I think that, yes, there is like a point, I think, that comes where it's like a real ethical issue. Because I guess for me, if it's something where you're actually worried about that person's life or their livelihood or their safety, like, yeah, like there's an ethical boundary there. You can't cross that. Like, if they've divulged that information under the pretext that they will be safe, and that you'll respect their confidentiality, like, you have to be a good person, in my opinion,
For
and put
sure.
that out. But then, some people would say, well, disclosure matters more than anything. Let's get cutthroat here and let's just dump it all out on the table. But I think you also have to measure that with, well, what's the impact of it? Like, is this information that I've got, as much as I actually would love to kind of show off and be like, look at what this person said to me, and like, I've got this recording, is it going to push it forward enough to justify someone potentially being put in danger?
Right.
You have to make that decision for yourself, I think, as individuals.
Yeah, I think that it would be useful if, you know, because I deal with software licenses a lot, and I think a lot about information licenses, and I think that it would be useful in the context of journalism if there was some kind of a license that sources could have with journalists, where it almost gives the journalist permission to publish it. And this probably is done in sort of ad hoc ways now, but basically a license which says, look, you can't share this at all, un like until on your deathbed or something, like just so that stuff doesn't get stuck and people, you know, their integrity, you know, because good journalists would not divulge, but it would just be good if journalists had a tool, like some kind of a license where they knew that worst case scenario, you know, that person dies or whatnot, and they can put it out in a certain situation. If we had a tool like that, I think a lot more information would come out.
Yeah, it's a bit like the whole sundown rule for declassifying documents. You know, like there's a certain time scale traditionally, although they certainly have had instances of pushing stuff back again. But, you know, there's traditionally kind of a cycle. And when it's hit that point of 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, you've got to declassify it. You know, I think there probably are agreements. I mean, certainly there are agreements of like, when I die, if I die, you know, then yes, you can put this out. And, you know, speaking personally, if I found out that individual was no longer alive, I'd probably put out the thing that I want to put out. But in my opinion, it's not vital enough of a piece of information to justify messing that person up or putting them in jeopardy. It's just certainly a very interesting claim. But it's, yeah, I think it's an individual choice, I guess, with journalists and their code of ethics. You've certainly got some pretty cutthroat journalists out there that won't even, shake their head once at just laying out a source. But then you have to think about in terms of building your network, right? You burn a bridge. Is someone going to build another bridge for you? And if you become a journalist who's known for burning their sources, how far down that road are you going to get before you got no sources?
Oh, and you have to have, I mean, and as we've already seen, the level of information that is needed to move the needle is so, so heavy. Like, you think that you have some bombshell.
Exactly.
But the internet will breeze by it in 20 minutes.
20 minutes. Yeah, exactly. Like, you think you've got the smoking gun. Like, dude, that won't even survive the 24-hour cycle.
Right. Yeah, the meme is real about, you know, aliens are here. Like, who cares? It's just...
Yeah. Well, that's a good topic to talk about. How much time have you got?
I've got like 5 more minutes. I got a 3:30.
All right, 5 more minutes. Let's quickly say real quick then. You know, this whole fact that people are just so saturated with information constantly 24/7 that the fact that you've got like a GS-15 NRO NGA insider in Congress talking about reverse engineering programs barely even bumps across the radar. And it's just like, that speaks volumes to where we are psychologically as a collective.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it bumped. I think that we felt the bump. I do think it will.
You got to remember, you're thinking in American context, didn't bump across the ocean.
Really?
No. Like, you're in your own little bubble of media with that. Like, it really just didn't make much of a splash.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, man.
Yeah. And, you know, this is sad to think about, but even if there was official disclosure, it's very possible that it still wouldn't. Like,
people
again, because
wouldn't believe it. They wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, they wouldn't believe it. Exactly. You just keep going. Because for many people, the hearing was official disclosure. It was under oath. It was from, you know, top intelligence. So for many people, that was enough.
I mean, it's a form of disclosure for sure.
It's a form of disclosure. So, I mean, ultimately, everything is... all new information from, you know, whatever source is more disclosure. So, you know, is there an event that could even theoretically do it for the entire population of Earth? I don't think there is. I don't think there's even
all turned up in the sky or something like that.
I don't know. I think that even if that happened, every single person on Earth would have to be able to see them. And because there would still be people on the other side of the earth that said, you know, I didn't see them.
Yeah.
You know,
apparently they flew over Washington in like the 50s and no one talks about that anymore, you know? So,
right. So, and half the people you talk to say, you know, I'm not going to believe in aliens until I see them myself.
For sure.
So we have to just learn to accept that. And it's a hard thing to accept, that no matter what the government says, no matter what the whistleblowers say, no matter what the NHI do, unless there is something that is so globally accessible at the same time where every single person on the planet is having an individual personal experience with the NHI, we have to accept that it's never going to be some kind of universal consciousness. I mean, there is universal consciousness happening, but yeah, you know, because just look at the rift in religions. I mean, there's going to be plenty of religions that would just never accept it. And they say, oh, no, that's I see the craft, but no, that's just a government craft. That's not,
yeah,
you know,
or it's demonic. It's plenty of that, like plenty of belief. It's just demonic, you know, in terms of religious archetypes.
Yeah. So, but I actually feel peace with that. I think that accepting the fact that there isn't a point where everyone on the planet is going to accept it, that actually makes it that makes the threshold for success closer, because it means that we don't have to get to 100% consensus. We just have to get to, you know, I don't know what is considered global maybe it's more than 50%. I don't know what counts as sort of like consensus reality. But consensus reality is not 100%. So maybe that's ending on a good note.
Bill, this has been great, man.
Yeah, it's been great.
We'll have to do it again. We'll have to do it again. Sure. I think there's going to be a lot more to discuss as we kind of go through this. And, you know, clearly you're invested in the subject like I am. So, yeah, thanks for your time, man. This has been awesome.
Thanks, man. Yeah, if anyone wants to hit me up, I'm just at Ottman on Minds.com/Ottman. And, yeah, rock on, man. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah.
All right.